From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 20th day of March 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. A bit later in the program, the folks from the Andersons from right here in Champaign County will join us to take a look at the agricultural cash grain markets. And we'll discuss the weather forecast, too, with Mark Russo at Risk Pulse in Chicago, Illinois. That as we wrap up our time together. Along the way, we'll get an update of the upcoming grain stocks report and how it may or may not be eventful, at least for soybeans. That with Todd Hubbs, agricultural economist, and it all happens right here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report for this Monday afternoon. It is the 20th day of March, 2017. Kurt Kimmel is now here. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
I take it your day started better than it ended, at least if you wanted the markets to go higher.
Yeah, being optimistic was kind of tough as the day wore on, but, starting last night, we kind of gapped higher, corn and beans particularly. We had the market last week go down and find fairly good support on some significant support levels and due for some short-term cycle lows that kind of fit the mold. Had the full moon low, Ides of March, and coming in today, first day of spring, and, had the momentum going. Reports of record heat out west, even windy conditions, talk of short-term strikes in different sectors in the southern hemisphere, improved crushing margins in China, even sold 130,000 tons of corn to South Korea, and rumors of some Chinese business around, and thought, we've got this made here. We can recover and get something going. But once we got into the 8:30 resumption of trade, things kind of sort of just ran out of momentum. There's more talk of bird flu, particularly in Alabama. News that the funds were actually net short corn after the last week's price action. Talk of Brazil and imposing a 20% import tax on ethanol coming into their country, just kind of sent things a little defensive. And weather maps put a little bit more rain potentially in the dry areas of the Southwest. And even wheat was, on the defensive pretty bad, just the fact that we're missing quite a bit of the world export business here over the short term. Particularly Egypt, but overall, export shipments is fairly good for all three commodities. We're going to meet export projections as a whole. Technically, though, it's pretty damaging price action that we saw today. The market charts show a new high here above the previous day, moved lower, closed below the previous day's low, indicating an outside down price reversal action. So tomorrow it's going to be interesting to see if we can't get a turnaround Tuesday. But from a technician's point of view, it's kind of fearful that we'll have a follow-through Tuesday instead of a turnaround Tuesday, Todd.
How important is the fact that the funds switched their positions on corn last week?
Well, it from a outside point of view, what we're in now is if they continue to build on a short position here, it could be also on some spread activity, buying beans and selling corn. But what we'll get into is down the road, it could be positive from the standpoint if the fundamental news would change or we get to a technical turn point where the green line goes above the red line, we could get some buying power back into the marketplace. But right now, with them going short, their trend following systems are negative, which means they'll continue to sell until they see some type of signal to switch it the other way.
We've been warned, I think, for quite some time now that the last couple of weeks of March could be weak as we move into the March 31 grain stocks and acreage reports. Do you expect anything different over the next several days as we head into those reports?
Well, price-wise, it's going to be hard to get some expecting bullish here until we see the reports here at the end of the month. Seasonally, oftentimes we get a little bit of a top first part of March, we turn lower into the first part of April. The estimates are kind of out as far as what traders are expecting for acreage and stocks. As far as the grain stocks go, it's going to show larger stocks than a year ago, but overall demand is larger than a year ago also. The key would probably be to see how the distribution is on the stocks, you know, how much on farm and how much we have in the elevator yet. Then, too, it's one of our first solid estimates on UC, so those numbers are going to be quite important to watch. Once those are priced in the marketplace, it's going to depend on weather from there on out. When you take the acreage estimate and you move the yield up and down, say 5-6 bushels in corn or 2 or 3 bushels in beans, that changes the bottom line quite a bit. So there's some market-sensitive information here at the end of the month, and after that, it's going to hinge on your favorite weather person to listen to.
And what are you hearing from the weather guys? Anything of interest?
Well, no extreme. They seem to be warm, normal to above on temperatures. Then there's a little hint of some wet weather the first week, 2 weeks of April and through here. After that, as you move on out, they're trying to keep temperatures warmer and a little bit on the drier side. You know, a lot of talk of, whether or not we're going to go into a El Nino effect or not. Our weather guy looks for some changes as we move more into late summer, into August. So I think there's going to be a little bit of everything for everybody, given a lot of ups and downs here as we get more into the growing season.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you being with us. Look forward to talking with you again next week.
Very good. Take care.
That's Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. In today's agricultural news, farm leaders in Washington expect smooth sailing for President Trump's pick for USDA chief now that former Georgia Governor Sonny Perdue's confirmation hearing has been scheduled for this week. Dale Moore, who is with the American Farm Bureau Federation, believes it to be good news.
And as you can imagine, all of us in agriculture are pretty excited. We've been waiting trying to be patient, but certainly excited now that all the information that the Ag Committee needed to get that process scheduled. And we look forward to that hearing being probably a very robust hearing, a lot of questions, certainly with the president's budget coming out.
Moore predicts a very efficient process, hoping for full Senate confirmation soon. But before then, he admits Perdue, with his mini ag business interest and lengthy vetting for the White House, could face tough committee questioning.
I certainly think there are going to be a lot of questions asked. And frankly, for a lot of us in agriculture, it's his experience in agriculture that has us excited to have someone of his caliber, not only in being a former governor, you know, in managing his state, but certainly someone that has had his boots on the ground, working both from the livestock end as a veterinarian, and certainly, in the grain business.
Moore expects Perdue's handling of the tough questions about his business dealings to go well. One of the things Sonny Perdue will need to do if he's confirmed as Secretary of Agriculture will be to usher through Congress the USDA's next budget and the Farm Bill. Farm groups aren't the only ones, of course, that are disappointed last week with President Donald Trump's budget proposal calling for $4.7 billion in cuts to that Department of Agriculture budget. Environmental Working Group officials have serious concerns, too, with what they call the president's skinny budget. EWG's Ag Policy Director Colin O'Neill says the spending priorities in the president's plan are misplaced.
Conservation spending is a small amount of the budget, but it has a huge impact on the environment. And at a time where we really need to be addressing the health and safety of our drinking water quality or drinking water supplies, we need these programs to be strengthened, not weakened.
He says the president's budget, if approved, would eliminate important USDA programs that are environmentally responsible. EWG is hoping more funding will be given to conservation programs in the next Farm Bill, and that those dollars will be targeted to where EWG believes they are most needed. Well, let's stay in Washington, D.C., but we'll transition from budget cuts from Donald Trump's administration to the infrastructure he may very well be wishing to update, or at least one that agriculture is hopeful about. You might be prepared to hear chatter next week about rivers, canals, and FDR if you're in D.C. The Waterways Council is holding its annual fly-in, bringing close to 100 of its members to Washington, including representatives from several large grain companies, builders, energy and barge companies, and unions to argue for strong fiscal 2018 funding at the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to speed improvements of inland waterways. The group plans to meet for a seminar next Monday with Representatives Rodney Davis from right here in Illinois, Garrett Graves from Louisiana, Darren LaHood from Illinois, and before hitting the offices of 85 to 100 lawmakers and their staffs on Tuesday. Deborah Calhoun is the senior vice president of the group. She says those locks, most of them, were built in the 1920s and 30s as part of the New Deal. And Calhoun says one of the messages that her group is going to take to the Hill is that when you're talking to the new administration about funding, they need to be part of the conversation. Now, Trump has suggested he will fight for infrastructure improvements, has proposed $5 billion for the Corps Civil Works Program, slightly more than the $4.62 billion President Barack Obama requested last year. While the president is cutting domestic discretionary spending and looking at past budget requests, this FY18 funding request is actually a very positive level for the Corps Civil Works Program, says Calhoun. Only once in the last 10 years, since fiscal year 2010, has an administration proposed $5 billion or more in the budget submitted to Congress. And finally today, we'll shift gears altogether. The meatpacking giant JBS says the media is overplaying its part in a Brazilian meat safety scandal. As Reuters reports, Brazilian police on Friday raided JBS South America and dozens of other smaller rivals as part of a sting to catch meatpackers bribing inspectors and politicians to overlook unsanitary practices. The report found evidence that some companies were manipulating certificates for meat exports to European markets. However, Cameron Brewitt, a JBS spokesperson, asserts that JBS's part in the story should be minor, saying there are no allegations in the judge's order that JBS or its executive management violated food safety or product quality standards or engaged in any wrongdoing. I'm sure we'll have more on this story later. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Well, USDA at the end of this month will let us know how much of the nation's soybean crop there is left in the bin. It should be a fairly uneventful number. And generally, Todd Hub says it's pretty easy to figure out how many soybeans have been consumed. There's a regular reporting system for how many bushels are exported and one for how many are crushed. That second report, the crush, calculates how many soybeans are crushed in the United States into its two components. These are soybean meal and soybean oil. Hubbs, an agricultural economist from the University of Illinois, says the report makes it easy enough to calculate disappearance, consumption, usage, whatever you want to call it, and consequently come up with a number that approximates how many bushels are left to use.
Yeah, I worked through some data and I get about 1.68 billion bushels. I'm seeing the March 1st stocks being for soybeans, barring some kind of surprise in the seed feed and residual number. But that's such a small component of soybean use. I don't think there's going to be a lot of surprising information in the March 1st soybean stocks number this year.
Again, Todd Hubbs' March 1 grain stocks figure for soybeans is 1.68 billion bushels. Here's the math he used to get there.
Exports in the first quarter, about 932 million bushels. For the second quarter, I've got them pegged at about 721 million bushels. And then the crush numbers, second quarter crush at 491 million bushels, which brings the total crush for the first half of the year at 976 million bushels. I mean, we've been crushing at a really good rate, but we have a lot of soybeans. So, you know, with USDA raising any stocks to 435 million bushels, if that number holds, if we don't drive those numbers down, you know, if the March 1st stock number is 1.68 billion, it means the last half of the marketing year we're going to have to consume about 1.23 billion bushels.
Hubbs thinks that's a reasonable number. It depends, though, he says, mostly on what happens in the export market through August. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Well, on this Monday afternoon, let's turn our attention to the weather forecast across the planet. We're going to tune in with Mark Russo. He's at Wrist Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Mark. Thanks for being with us.
Hey. Yeah, good afternoon, Todd. Glad to be here.
Let's start in South America. There's an awful lot being made about the corn crop there, the safrinha crop that's just been put into the ground. Do we have an idea what their weather looks like? I don't know. It's a three-month finish to this crop, so however far you'd like to go out would be great.
Well, certainly they're starting off their new growing season in very good shape, as rainfall across much of the Brazil winter corn areas, the safrinha corn areas, that's been basically, you know, near to slightly below normal, but nothing that extreme from a dryness standpoint. That's actually one of the reasons why their Brazil soybean harvest has been so favorable, because there's been a lack of any kind of wet pattern that's allowed the soybeans to come out of the ground earlier. And on top of that, has allowed winter corn planting. And so with the tail end of the rainy season here, it looks like actually the next couple of weeks is still kind of normal rainfall across much of Brazil. So that's going to maintain, if not even further, improve their soil moisture in the safrinha corn belt of Brazil.
All right, now come back to the United States. We had some really quite low temperatures in the southeast last week. Were they low enough to do very much damage to the fruit crop, do you think?
Well, certainly the possibility here, even in the southern sections of the Midwest from a winter wheat standpoint, you did get down to levels that, depending on the exact stage of the crop, may have produced some isolated issues here. And so certainly there could have been some damage based on, well, two things. Number one, the exact temperatures that occurred, the sub-freezing temperatures last week. But probably more important is the fact that prior to that cold, we did have the exceptionally warm conditions that helped to accelerate, whether that's, you know, fruit trees flowering to winter wheat coming out of dormancy ahead of schedule.
And finally, other places across the United States for this week that you find most interesting.
Yeah, the Plains hard red winter wheat belt, we see a turn to a more active pattern, which is really needed here as crop stress is increasing as a result of the hot, dry, and windy conditions across the plains. The main precipitation here coming up is scheduled for late this week, over the weekend, and actually more so into next week. That looks to be the best window for rain as these systems track into the plains from the desert southwest. And depending on the exact timing or speed of these systems, that's going to dictate how much of the plains receives significant precipitation. Certainly is a setup that the vast majority will improve, especially in the state of Kansas, our largest wheat producing state.
Hey, Mark, thanks so much. We appreciate you being with us for the day.
You're welcome, Todd. Have a great day.
You too. That, of course, is Mark Russo. He is with Wrist Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You can always hear Mark's forecast again anytime you'd like off of our website. The address there is willag.org. That's willag.org. In fact, you can find all of our or most of our programming there for you to listen to on demand. I'm Todd Gleason.